Hey Siri, play Social Geek Radio.
Okay, Social Geek Radio podcast coming up.
Hello, geeks, and welcome to Social Geek Radio. I'm Jack Munson, your host and social media consigliere. Today's guest will be author Scott Greenberg. Today's episode is brought to you by Social Joey, Northeast Color, and Franchise Payments Network. If you're looking for something buzzworthy to reward your customers, Pollinate is an all-inclusive loyalty and gift card technology company focused on the franchise space. Powered by Franchise Payments Network, they work with your team to create a reward system that engages your customers, boosts sales, and boosts frequency. With Pollinate, franchise systems enjoy a 17% ticket lift and 50% increase in customer visits for those enrolled in the program. With Pollinate, everyone will earn, redeem, enjoy, and repeat. To check out more, go to pollinate.com/marketing. Scott Greenberg is a next level speaker focusing on the franchise space. His latest book is The Wealthy Franchisee. Love that title. How you doing, Scott?
I'm good. So glad to be here.
So thanks for being here. And I want to find out all about the book and how franchisees can be wealthy. But first, give us a little bit of your background. What's your story?
Well, long before writing this book, before being a franchise speaker, before being a franchisee, long before that, I had an experience that at the time I had no idea would launch me into the franchise space. So I'd graduated from college and got into film school at New York University and learned a lot in screenwriting class about, number one, write what you know, they would say. And they would say, write about the human condition, really pay attention to how people think and feel and behave so that you can capture those things in your stories. So I was the youngest person at the film school. So I knew the least when they say, write what you know. And I remember thinking, gosh, I wish I could have some kind of extraordinary experience that would inform my stories. Be careful what you wish for. after my first semester, I found a lump on my neck and was consequently diagnosed with cancer, Hodgkin's disease, and a big tumor in my chest. And the whole dramatic thing unfolded over the next year. So I had to move back to California and spend the next year in chemotherapy, radiation, the whole thing. So what I noticed when I was in chemotherapy is I'd be in this room with all these other cancer patients in very similar circumstances, but they reacted very differently. And it wasn't their physical prognosis that mattered. It was more about, you know, kind of what was their attitude and what was their emotional response to being there. And that's what determined who suffered and who, you know, is able to get through it. And I noticed some people there, they would ultimately pass away, but on those days they were really living. One guy in particular I became very friendly with, and you know, I visited him in the hospital the day before he passed, but boy, he was living. And so because of that seed that was planted in me in film school about paying attention to the human condition, it made me curious as to why is it in similar circumstances, people, you know, react differently and get a different result. So you could see how that parallels the franchise world. But at the time, I didn't know that's where I was headed. So a friend of mine, when I was cured about a year into treatment, and I'm still fine today, a friend of mine was putting on a conference and said, hey, you know, I've heard what you've kind of said about, you know, cancer and your approach and choosing a reaction. Why don't you come to our conference and be our keynote speaker and talk about leadership and kind of how your story applies to that? I thought that speech would be a one-off, but it went pretty well and it led to some more invitations. And my phone's been ringing for more than 20 years with invitations to speak to all kinds of different groups.
Wow.
So in the beginning, it was I was just doing straight out motivational speaking with an emphasis on resilience, overcoming adversity. Then it kind of evolved a little more into leadership and peak performance. And my audiences, you know, changed and evolved over the years. I don't want to just tell a cancer story. I mean, I really wanted to help people with broader concepts that applied to business as well as to anything physical. So it went really, really well. Before I knew it, I was a full-time motivational speaker traveling all over the place, getting paid to give these presentations. And then I got married and my wife and I were starting a family. And I realized I still want to keep speaking, but not quite as much. I want to, you know, be around for kids. So when I had that thought, I was on an airplane and I saw an ad in an airline magazine for a franchise I'd never seen before called Edible Arrangements.
Now, what year was this?
So this would have been about 15, 16 years ago. Okay. So I'll let you do the math.
But, yeah, got it.
Yeah, so maybe 2004, 2005, around then, I think maybe 2005. And I thought, wow, this is really cool. I've never seen anything like it. And you know, and it's a fruit basket business. How difficult could that be? Yeah, famous last words.
Right.
So before I knew it, I was, you know, participating in Discovery Day, and I started signing lots of things. I started signing a franchise agreement and a contract, you know. Okay. And I signed lots of checks. Unfortunately, the front of the check, not the back of the check. So the plan from the very beginning was not to stop speaking. It was to speak less, but to build a secondary source of revenue. And equally important, to have a laboratory where I could try out all these leadership concepts and find out, okay, what really is true and what's just a bunch of, you know, motivational fluff that a bunch of speakers who haven't actually done anything that they've been, you know, spouting off. So, and that also meant because I wanted to continue speaking, I had to work very hard to really develop employees and to create systems that didn't require me to always have to be there, which is kind of how a franchise is supposed to be. So while still speaking, I was also then a franchisee for 10 years. So we built our first location and it did really well. And I continued to learn, worked hard. We ended up becoming the flagship location in Los Angeles. About 105 locations in California. And in any given week, our store ranked in the top five. Very often it ranked number one. And then about 6 years in, I had an opportunity to take over a struggling location across town. And I thought, okay, that's going to be the real test of, have I really learned anything about leadership? You can get lucky, you know, with a location, but
right.
Do I have what it takes to turn one around?
Right. Start with one that's a little below zero and let's see how good you are, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I took that one over, and out of 105 stores, that one typically ranked 104th. So honestly, I think it'd be a better story if it ranked 105th, but I'll give the previous order some credit.
Yeah, you could have tanked the first year just to have a better story to tell.
That's right. Anyway, within a year, we made it profitable using some of these things that I was learning. So what ended up happening was, because of all my experience in the franchise, and we won some awards, you know, customer service and manager of the year, and eventually I was asked to speak at the Edible Arrangements Convention to all my peers about how to build high-performing teams. So that was great, but it ended up transforming my speaking career into specializing in franchise systems.
Mm.
So what was great is there's a lot of people who have a lot of experience in one or two franchise systems as a franchisee or as a franchisor. But as a speaker, I was now exposed to all kinds of different franchises. And part of my process is I always interview a lot of people before every presentation to really get to know the brand, to hear their concerns, their goals. And so for every franchise I speak to, I get to meet their top performers, those who are struggling, and many who are in between. And when you start to interview enough of these people, you start to see some trends. You see, hear what all the typical complaints are, the typical tensions between franchisee and franchisor. But what I really paid attention to were the top franchisees across all these brands. What do they all have in common, regardless of the brand? And when you meet enough of them and you pay attention long enough, what they all have in common, it's not just apparent, it is obvious. And so my work today is on really focusing on what is it that these people who I call wealthy franchisees, what is it that they do that makes them different, that makes them special and enables them to succeed? And what can the rest of us do to replicate that? So all my work is based on those questions. Top franchisees, what are they doing and what can we all do to get the same results?
Excellent. And I want to get into some of those questions, but first, just an observation. We talk to a lot of people who've written a lot of books and then they go out on a speaking tour. You did that exactly backwards, right? You had a career as a storyteller, and that all led to this book that we're about to talk about.
Yeah, I appreciate making that observation. Usually to be a professional speaker, you have to accomplish something first. I just had to beat cancer, and just having that signature story was enough to get me in the door. But you can't build a speaking career just by, you know, having endured something. You really have to pull out some nuggets and make it about the audience. A lot of people with overcoming adversity stories, they want to get up and talk about themselves and how they survive, and they get a polite round of applause. For me, from the very beginning, I didn't want to make it about me. I wanted to make it about the audience and what they were going through. And that approach really served me. So, but I knew that if I wanted to take my speaking career to the next level, I needed more experience besides battling cancer and besides speaking itself. So that was a big part of the Edible Arrangements experience for me. So you know, I'm really grateful to have been able to do both.
You pick the right space and the right industry, I think, to help change people's lives and lift them up and hopefully make them wealthy. Let's talk a bit about the wealthy franchisee. How do you define that?
Well, very good question. So obviously having the word wealthy there in the title is a bit of a hook. I actually was at I was giving a live presentation at a franchise the other day, and believe it or not, and there's a woman in the front row before the speech who saw my title, and she says, "I really like your title because that's what I want." Mm-hmm. So it's a bit of a hook. So what I say in the book, however, is that there are three criteria for being a wealthy franchisee. The first is the most obvious one, which is financial payoff. The idea is you want to have more money in your pocket at dinner than you had at breakfast. How much money you need to be wealthy, that's relative to your expectations, to the city you live in, and to how much you invested. But the idea is that for your investment, for your expectations, you're making good money. So that's the first characteristic. But here's what I don't think a lot of people appreciate is that, you know, being a franchisee, it's not just a business, it's a lifestyle that you're buying. And not all that is reflected in your profit and loss statement. So the bottom half of your P&L, the expenses, what it doesn't share is how much time you spent to get the revenues, how many fights you had with your spouse because you're stressed out, how many Little League games you missed out on. So the second characteristic of being a wealthy franchisee is being in control of your time. Mm. You can always make more money, but you can't get back more time. So if two franchisees are both netting, you know, $700,000, or I should say, you know, the gross sales are $700,000, one's doing that, putting in 20 hours a week, the other one's putting in 80 hours a week, that's not the same thing. It's not the same payoff.
Yeah.
So we need to be in control of our time. And what I observed in every chapter, I profile a wealthy franchisee from a variety of brands. None of them are slaves to their business. All of them take vacations, are home for dinner. They go to ballet recitals. They work hard, but they work smart. And so it's less about full time and more about full commitment. And the franchisees I interviewed who, you know, owned 40 locations, they don't have any more time in the day than someone who has one, but they're very smart about how they use their time. So the idea is to be in control of your time. Now, if you want to work 80 hours a week, then great. But the idea is to have the option. So the first characteristic is good financial payoff. The second one is being in control of your time and not being a slave to your business. The third characteristic of being a wealthy franchisee is quality of life. Your life should be better for having your business in it. If you would have asked me on Valentine's Day at Edible Arrangements, am I happy? I would have thrown strawberries at you. My business was up for sale every February 14th.
Right,
I didn't care how much money I was making. It was so stressful. I just thought, why am I doing this? This is taking days off my life. But we have a saying in the industry, February 15th always comes. And that was fine. So I could sacrifice quality of life a few days out of the year, especially if the silver lining is there's some money being made. But there's some people who really, really hate what they do. And the business is a constant source of stress. And life is just too. To be a wealthy franchisee, it means you're making plenty of money. It means you're in control of your time. And the business is allowing you to experience quality of life.
So before we get to the things that will help them succeed, let's talk about some of the misconceptions out there, because I think there's a lot of, shall we say, formulas out there that some people just think that they put in place and this will make you succeed. What are some misconceptions and myths that you've discovered?
There are myths that are outside the industry for people who haven't done it. And then for people who are doing it, there's a separate set of myths. So the outside myth is, hey, I just have to pay the franchise fee. The franchisor will give me the blueprints, they'll give me the keys, and they'll tell me exactly what to do to succeed. So all I have to do is follow the manual and I'm going to get wealthy. I'm going to get rich. So they have very high expectations of the franchisor or of the franchise model itself. And those of us who've been in the business just know it's simply not that true. But even among those of us who've been in the business, there are plenty of myths. One of the questions I like to ask people is, the most successful people in your brand, why do you think they're successful? And the biggest answer I get is, well, they've got a good location.
I used to get that at Edible Arrangements, right? Well, you're in Los Angeles and I'm over here in Idaho, of course, right?
Right, exactly. You know, but when I, all these great wealthy franchisees who I've met, some of them might be helped by their locations, but most of them have average locations and they make them great. And what they also tend to do is they take locations that others have failed at, or they've written off. They said, this is just a terrible location. So the wealthy franchisees gobble up these failing locations, and through better operations, they turn them around and they make them great. One of the franchisees who I interviewed for the book is with the UPS store, enormous franchise, thousands of locations. Twice he acquired a struggling store, turned it around, and made it number one in the system. The first store was a very average location with no geographic advantages. The second one, not only was it an average location, it was two doors away from a FedEx office store.
Oh boy.
Right. Once again, using great customer service tactics, he turned both of those stores into the number one store. Every franchise system has stories of people who took over a location that people thought is just a bad location, and they made it great. And the problem with, you know, location is that it might be too expensive to get a great location, or it's just not available. So wealthy franchisees do not rely on great locations. They rely on decent locations and great operations.
And now here in 2020, a lot of systems that we speak with, location means nothing anymore because everything's coming out of someone else's kitchen or being delivered or being shipped or something like that. I would imagine edible is right along those same lines. Doesn't really matter where the brick and mortar is because they're doing so much great stuff online and, you know, via shipping and things like that.
Right. And so the brick and mortar locations, I think, matter less and less. But at the same time, you know, when you buy a franchise, often you're buying a territory where you're allowed to do business or make your deliveries. Well, I had a belief that when I bought my first location, it was just adjacent to Beverly Hills and West Hollywood. And we did very well, not because of that location, in spite of it. Because it was a wealthier location, it was less dense. There was less people there.
Sure.
And even though
sure.
it was a lot of wealthy people, they didn't get wealthy by blowing their money on fruit baskets, right?
And I'm guessing your rent was a little pricey in Beverly Hills, West Hollywood.
Okay, the rent was crazy. And also, we were in a very busy street with a lot of vehicular traffic, but not necessarily a lot of pedestrian traffic. Mm-hmm. And there was just a lot of traffic. So we're doing deliveries in a really tough place where there's not a lot of parking. So our success was not because of location, it was in spite of it. So I think people pay too much attention to that. The second myth that I hear a lot about is that, well, these wealthy franchisees, they're workaholics. They're constantly there and they work like crazy. And again, through my personal experience and through all these people I interviewed, it's just not true. These people have quality of life. They really invest a lot in building great teams, so they don't always have to be there. So that's a myth. It's a myth that they have a lot more experience or they're a lot more educated. Paul D'Amico from Global Franchise Group told me when he was CEO of Naf Naf Grill, he said, I won't sell to doctors or lawyers because you know they're great at doctor or lawyering, but they don't know anything about running a restaurant and they're less likely to embrace the system. So there's just a lot of untruths that are out there. And I always ask franchisees, again, why do you think the best people in your system are succeeding? And they start making excuses and it's just simply not true.
Yeah. It's kind of the same in the corporate world with salespeople. You know, why is that guy the number one salesperson? Well, you know, he had all the great accounts and you know, the sales manager likes him more. And anytime you hear that, it's like, is that really true or is that really an excuse of why you're not performing?
Yeah, there's just so many excuses that franchisees make. And again, I've made those excuses. I've been a franchisee. You know, I'm hired typically by franchisors to speak to franchisees, but I'm not going to say anything that I don't believe in. And it's interesting to hear the franchisor's perspective and the franchisee's perspective and where the communication breaks down. Someone who's interested in the human condition as a former motivational speaker, that psychology, those social dynamics, that's the stuff I find delicious. Mm-hmm. I just think it's so fascinating. And I also have come to realize that is the basis for franchise success. It's not just operations or marketing. It's the ability to really manage all that humanity, the way we think, the way we control our emotions, the way we interact with other people. That's really where the truth lies in franchise success.
Tell me more about that. Let's dive into some of the main things that franchisees in your book are doing that are allowing them to currently be successful.
So there are three factors that impact the results we get from our business. There's our circumstances, which we don't control. So that's the economy or the competition or, you know, the pandemic. The second, and a lot of people, again, love to blame their circumstances because it's an easy way to skirt responsibility.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right? 2020 is going to be the year of blame for the next decade, probably, right? So, okay.
Yeah, right. And again, it's not that circumstances aren't real. I mean, you know, the pandemic has just shut some businesses down.
Yeah.
So I can appreciate that. But most of the time, the circumstances don't tell the whole story because invariably, you'll find other franchise locations in the same brand who are thriving in the same set of circumstances. So they're real, they don't tell the whole story. The second piece is operations. So that's our sales and our marketing and our branding and our recipes and all the stuff that keeps us busy. It's what we pay our franchisor to teach us. Obviously, these things are important and they're huge. However, there's a lot of people engaged in the same operations who aren't getting the same results. And what I find is that, you know, when I first got into Edible Arrangements, I called the top performers in the company to hear what they were doing, and they weren't doing anything special. And then when I became a top operator, people started calling me. I could tell they were disappointed with my answers. Very often, wealthy franchisees don't know what they're doing that makes them great. It's the only way they know how to do business. So things like, you know, marketing or, you know, treating employees well, getting out in the community, these aren't the secrets to success. They're the prerequisite.
Right, right. That's the minimum that you need to do. You need to market well and treat people well. What a concept. And get out into the community. That gives you a C at the end of the day.
Yes, exactly. That makes you an average student.
Right.
So it turns out that there is a third factor, but it's not one that people ask about. People call up the top franchisees and they say, how are you marketing? How are you cutting costs? They don't ask about this third factor because it's less tangible and people write it off, but it is everything. And that is the human factor. It's our ability to manage our thoughts, to control our emotions and keep a clear head. It's our ability to cultivate a strong partnership with the franchisor, our ability to wow our customers, to engage our employees. It's all that psychology, all that emotion, all those social skills that directly impact how well we execute operations. Because as you know, as a marketing expert, marketing isn't just about advertising, it's also about patience and faith. And managing employees isn't just about directing them, it's about inspiring them and engaging them. And customer service isn't just about facilitating transactions, it's about building connections and heightening emotions. All that people stuff matters. And everyone says, hey, we're in the people business, but what does that mean? And I think it really means its ability to keep a clear head. And that doesn't mean positivity. I don't preach positivity. I think a lot of franchisees, their business model is faith or optimism. That's not going to cut costs or drive traffic.
Yeah, that's a poster on the office wall, right?
Yeah. So a lot of people make some pretty irresponsible decisions. I interviewed one franchisee and I said, so tell me, you know, how is business going? And he says, well, you know how they say most businesses close in a year? It's been 18 months, so we're still open. So I guess we're doing well. And I thought, this guy has no idea how he's doing. So I don't preach positivity. I certainly don't preach negativity. I preach clarity, the ability to clear your mind of all the cognitive distortion, of all the emotion, of all that subjectivity that pulls you away from data, from objective thinking. So wealthy franchisees are not necessarily positive. They're clear. They see the landscape for how it is, and that enables them to make better decisions. So that's a big part of it. And then there's the social side of it, which is the ability to not see your employees as a burden, but as an opportunity, and not just to train them to complete tasks, but to develop them into leaders who can do the work that you shouldn't be doing yourself. And then, of course, with customers, it's about understanding that no matter what products or service or widgets you sell, your real purpose is to elevate the emotional state of everyone you come into contact with. What people get matters less than how they feel. Mm-hmm. That only happens if we can be deliberate about it. So what makes wealthy franchisees great is in the same set of circumstances as everyone else, they execute operations at a higher level because their operations are infused with that mastery of the human element. That's what the book is about. That is the difference maker. And it's something I'm just really passionate about understanding and sharing.
Wow. Love that. Love those elements. And final question before we go today, Scott. I want to learn a little bit more about your thoughts on how the franchisor should be involved and what their role is in helping franchisees with all of the things you're talking about today.
In an ideal world, a franchisor is as committed to give the emotional human support as they are the operational support. So here's the manual on how to build and operate a frozen yogurt shop. Here's how to market it. And here are all these other tools to help you keep a clear head, to encourage you to stick to the system, to help you improve the life. And ideally, they would do that. One brand I talked to that does a greater job is Kitchen Tune-Up. Heidi Morrissey, who runs Kitchen Tune-Up, she has a daily podcast, which I'm sure it's right up there with quality of yours, but I would never say it's better than yours, Jack.
But it's thank you. A daily I'm sure podcast. It's much better. Are you kidding? Come on.
Okay. Well, I'm being for me to argue. So every day she offers tools, sort of, you know, personal growth tools and leadership tools beyond the operational piece of Kitchen Tune-Up, because she understands that we don't just run our business, we feel our business. So every day she's giving her franchisees a little bit of something, and a lot of them do. I think it's great when they can. The problem is most franchisors are not psychologists or life coaches or any of those things. They're experts in pest control and in home senior care. They're experts in the operational piece. And I think as a franchisee, to expect that kind of emotional support, it might be too much. And so what I say in the book is, if you have to choose between a franchisee who's great with operations, or I'm sorry, a franchisor who's great with operations, or a franchisor who's great with emotional support, go for the franchise that's great with operationals, the operational stuff. That's what you need from them. The emotional support you can get from other sources.
Right, right. You can find your coaching and other things elsewhere, because a lot of franchisors aren't quite there yet. But it's great to hear you're working with some who are.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, when they complain about their franchisees, usually it's about these human elements, that they're being driven by their emotions, that they're not sticking to the system, that they're just, you know, going through the motions with employees. I mean, their complaints about them are rooted in humanity. That's why they bring me in to speak, to address these things. But then I look at the agenda of their franchise conventions, and other than me, there's nothing is about the human element. It's all about operations
and marketing, right. And yeah.
So you know what? It's great. Leave it to me. Let me take care of it. Buy them my book. Bring me
there
the
you
sweet.
Go.
You just give them the recipe for frozen yogurt.
Excellent. Well, speaking of the book, Scott, I want to thank you for being on the show today. The book is called The Wealthy Franchisee. And if people have questions or want to learn more about it or about you, where can we send them?
My website is scottgreenberg.com, B-E-R-G, and all the information on me and the book, it's there as well. And you can find me in all the different social media outlets.
Excellent. Thanks so much for your time today, and we will chat with you down the road.
Such a pleasure. Thanks.
And now it's time for the Health and Safety Spotlight, brought to you by Northeast Color. Every week, we're looking at and sharing stories of franchise brands making a difference in health and safety. As the world continues to recover from the pandemic, the physical therapy franchise Physical, that's Physical with an FYZ, has launched an innovative approach to health and wellness that has the potential to combat a wide variety of long-term issues caused by COVID-19. Physical began rolling out its pulmonary program for patients that have been affected by COVID-19 throughout the U.S. The program includes a care guide with resources about overall treatment protocols, help with evaluations, and innovative tools. Moving forward, this innovative care will continue to provide essential assistance to patients in a post-COVID world. If you have stories about how your franchise system is keeping everyone healthy and safe, let us know. We'll share them here thanks to our friends at Northeast Color. Northeast Color is offering franchise systems help with social distancing floor decals, signs, and window decals, suspended partitions for the front desk or workout stations, parking lot signage, and hand sanitizer pedestals with signage, all fully branded and customized for your franchisees. Learn more now at northeastcolor.com. And thanks for listening to Social Geek Radio. We're here to help you get yourself ready for the comeback of a lifetime. Copyright 2020, Social Geek Enterprises, Inc.